Good morning. We do have a good crowd out this morning. We're thankful for your presence. Yes, I do have a mask on. Again, precautionary. A couple of the kids at camp, we found out last night, tested positive when they came home. And so we just thought it would be best to go ahead and mask up today. And nobody has any symptoms or anything like that, at least as far as our family is concerned. So hopefully it will be nothing, but we decided to do this morning. End on empty. It is a really a sports term, and again, you know me, I like my sports, and so I talk about them quite often, and it's something that I heard over the years, but really our coaches would tell us as we were getting ready to go out onto the court, onto the field, one of the last things that they would tell us to do is end on empty. And basically, it just means expend all the energy that you have on the field, on the court, and hypothetically speaking, when the buzzer sounds, you collapse. Which I've seen happen before. You expend so much energy, and then you realize, okay, the game's over, and you realize your body is done. And that's the idea. That's what the coaches would tell us to do. But I think spiritually speaking, God tells us to do this too. Are we spiritually expending all of our energy? Or are we trying to save energy for, other things, more worldly things? Again, this doesn't mean that, we're going to spend 24 hours a day doing spiritual things or anything like that. But basically, it's a lesson about fighting to the end. You know, if we read 1 Kings chapter 15, verses 9 through 16, maybe even verse 15, we realize things were pretty good with Asa and his kingship. But there's a change that happens in verse 16. Now there was a war between Asa and Baasha, king of Israel, all their days. And it was going to be some of the things that centered around that war that was going to change the perspective of Asa at the end of his life. This is the account of the king Asa. Now, Asa was the third king in the divided kingdom. Abijam was his father. Rehoboam was his grandfather. And for the most part, he is considered to be a good king. Before we get too much further, I want you to know that I'm going to spend a little bit more time on the introduction, setting things up than I normally do, and we'll take some of that time off during the points, but it's going to take us a while to get through King Asa's good part of his kingship so that we can get to the end of his kingship. The reign began very peacefully in 2 Chronicles chapter 14 and verse 1. So Abijah slept with his father, and they buried him in the city of David, and his son Asa became king in his place. The land was undisturbed for 10 years during his days. Asa did good and right in the sight of the Lord his God, for he removed the foreign altars, the high places, tore down the sacred pillars, cut down the ashram, and commanded Judah to seek the Lord, the God of their fathers, and to serve the law and the commandment. He also removed the high places and the incense altars from all the cities of Judah, and the kingdom was undisturbed under him. He built fortified cities in Judah since the land was undisturbed. And there was no one at war with him during those years because the Lord had given him rest. And so we don't find the conflict between Asa and Baasha just quite yet. But notice all of the things that he did during his reign. He removed the idols, he strengthened Judah, and he made Israel worship the God of their fathers the way his father David did. All of those things are good things. All of those things are things that we should be doing, and again, many of them spiritually speaking, but they should also continue through the end of our days. Because this lesson is not necessarily about the good times, but about the bad. During the reign of Asa, God promised to be with Asa. And Asa threw himself into purifying Judah as best he could. In fact, people from Israel, the northern kingdom, and this is where some of the conflict comes in, but the northern kingdom, with Baasha being king, the northern kingdom flocked to Judah. They said, well, they're doing what's right, and they saw that. They said, well, let's just go down there. Right? We're still people of God. We're still children of God. And so they decided, you know what? We're going to go to the place where people are worshiping God the way that they should. Wouldn't we want to flock to a place like that? Those folks are doing what's right. Those folks are doing what we're supposed to be doing. And so let's go there. And again, this is what was the cause of part of the problem that happened during the reign of Asa. Asa even went against his own family to follow God. He didn't follow in the path that his father laid out. His father was not a good king. But Asa tried to be, at least during the beginning of his reign. It wasn't perfect, but again, notice what 2 Chronicles chapter 15 and verse 17 says. But the high places were not removed from Israel. Nevertheless, Asa's heart was blameless all his days. It wasn't perfect, but his heart was in the right place. Again, I say this is not a lesson about those good times. It's a lesson about the end of Asa's life. And the fact that Asa did not run through the finish line. If you've ever seen a sprint, sprinters don't stop at the finish line, do they? No, they don't run just 100 meters. They're only judged by 100 meters. Typically, they run about 105 meters because they run through the finish line. They don't start slowing down until after they hit the finish line. At least the good sprinters don't. You don't want to stop partway before because somebody is tracking you down. You want to run through the finish line. And it seems Asa saw the finish line ahead and kind of started to slow down in his life. And I wonder how often we do that. We see the finish line, we see the end coming, and we start to slow down. Because we feel what we've done in the past is going to be sufficient, but we don't run through the finish line. And I believe Asa did that. Israel began fortifying their cities. Baasha not fortifying their cities from a fight against anyone other than trying to keep people in their city. Baasha decides, I don't want people going to other places, and so we're going to fortify our cities to keep people in, not just to keep the enemy out. And it's during this time that Asa starts wandering away from God. 2 Chronicles 16, starting in verse 2. Then Asa brought out silver and gold from the treasuries of the house of the Lord and the king's house, and sent them to Ben-Hadad, king of Aram, who lived in Damascus, saying, let there be a treaty between you and me. As between my father and your father, behold, I have sent you gold and silver. Go, break your treaty with Baasha, king of Israel, so that he will withdraw from me. So Ben-Hadad listened to King Asa and sent the commanders of his armies against the cities of Israel. And they conquered Ijon, Dan, Abel-Maim, and there and all the store cities of Naphtali. When Baasha heard of it, he ceased fortifying Ramah and stopped his work. We find that Asa, in this moment, doesn't do what's right. Even though the result turns out in his favor, at least for the moment, God sends him a prophet. We're not going to take the time to look through all of that, but I encourage you to look at some of those following verses. God sends a prophet to Asa. Asa decides that he doesn't like the message, and so he throws this prophet in prison. But basically, God is saying, you know what? Leave your brothers alone. Leave Israel alone. Stop fighting against one another. I don't know if you have children, if you have more than one. I don't know what it is about these three boys, but they just fight all the time. Now, they get along sometimes well, but all of a sudden you'll hear a scream, what happened? So-and-so hit me. Right? You don't want your children to fight with one another. You want them to be kind to one another. You want them to love one another. And so every time they've fought, every time they hit each other, I make them tell each other, you tell your brother, I love you. And so I make them say, I love you to their brother. Because that's what we're supposed to do. And I believe that that's what God is trying to tell Asa to do. Tell Baasha, you love him. Because you should. Even though you're not getting along right now, you're still brethren. But Asa doesn't like the message. Asa stays mad at God. And he dies with lame feet, not trusting God. What can we learn from all of this? Well, the first thing that I want us to consider this morning is that God means what he says. In Exodus chapter 20, starting in verse 1. Then God spoke all these words, saying, I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourself an idol or any likeness that is in heaven or on the earth beneath, or in the water underneath the earth. You shall not worship them or serve them, for I, the Lord, am your God. I am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers on the children, on the third and fourth generation to those who hate me, but showing loving kindness to thousands, to those who have loved me and keep my commandments. God means that. He means what he says here. But what happens if we don't turn to him in times of trouble? Now again, Asa may not have been setting up idols to worship. In fact, he was tearing them down, wasn't he? He wasn't necessarily setting up idols, but when it came to this time of trouble, he didn't turn to God. He turned to another nation. It said, break your treaty with them and follow me, and I'll empty my storehouses and I'll give you gold and silver that the Lord has blessed us with. And God said, don't do that. Trust me. I'll get you out of this. I'll keep you from harm, but you have to trust me. And in not trusting God, in going to another nation, in trusting in silver and gold, that silver and gold was going to save the day, he put something else ahead of God. And in that way, he was telling God, he was showing God, he didn't trust him. Look at Jeremiah chapter 7. Jeremiah chapter 7, starting in verse 4. We're told there, do not trust in deceptive words, saying, this is the temple of the Lord, the temple of the Lord, the temple of the Lord. What Israel was doing during the time of Jeremiah, as there were warnings that they were going to go into Babylonian captivity, the northern kingdom was already in Assyrian captivity. What the southern kingdom was doing was, the temple is with us. We have the temple of the Lord, the temple of the Lord. But they weren't following God's will. He said, don't just say the temple of the Lord, the temple of the Lord. Show me. You're trusting in the words. You're trusting in the building. Trust in me. Verse 5 of Jeremiah chapter 7. For if you truly amend your ways and your deeds, if you truly practice justice between a man and his neighbor, if you do not oppress the aliens, the orphans, or the widows, and do not shed innocent blood in this place, nor walk after other gods to your own ruin, then I will let you dwell in this place, in the land that I gave your fathers forever and ever. Behold, you are trusting in deceptive words to no avail. Will you steal, murder, and commit adultery, and swear falsely, and offer sacrifices to Baal, and walk after other gods that you have not known? Then come and stand before me in this house, which is called by my name, and said, we are delivered, that you may do all of these abominations. Has this house, which is called by my name, become a den of robbers in your sight? Behold, I have seen it, declares the Lord. I wonder how often we do the same thing. how often we go out into the world and we do all the things. And again, if you go back to the Ten Commandments, he basically lists them. Will you steal, murder, commit adultery, swear falsely, offer sacrifices to Baal, walk after other gods, and then come to this house that's called by my name and think, we're delivered. We're okay. How often do we do whatever it is that we want to do while we're out there and come into this place and say, we're here in the Church of Christ. We're delivered. Everything's okay. It doesn't work that way. It's not going to work that way. But this is what Asa tried. Even though it is the temple of the Lord that they're walking into, says, you're not treating it the way that you should. You're trusting in it. You're not trusting in me. So many people try to use their own wisdom much in the same way that Asa does. 1 Corinthians 3, starting in verse 18. Let no man deceive himself. If any man among you thinks that he is wise in this age, he must become foolish so that he may become wise. For the wisdom of this world is foolishness before God, for it is written, he is the one who catches the wise in their craftiness. And again, the Lord knows the reasoning of the wise, that they are useless. It is useless to try to live our lives by our own wisdom. So when we try that, we're putting something else ahead of God. We're putting my cognitive ability against God's cognitive ability and saying, you know what, I think this is what God would want, instead of finding out what God does want and doing that. I think we can learn from King Asa that we need to seek God's solution. So the problem began with Asa when he tried to figure it out on his own. Again, in 2 Chronicles chapter 16, starting in verse 7. At that time, Hanani, the seer, came to Asa, king of Judah, and said to him, because you have relied on the king of Aram and have not relied on the Lord your God, therefore the army of the king of Aram has escaped out of your hand. Were not the Ethiopians and the Lubim an immense army with very many chariots and horsemen? Yet because you relied on the Lord, he delivered them into your hand. He said, look into your past. Look what you did when you were up against an even stronger army. Didn't I deliver you? Verse 9, for the eyes of the Lord move to and fro throughout the earth, that he may strongly support those whose heart is completely his. You used to be that way, Asa. Why not now? You have acted foolishly in this. Indeed, from now on you will surely have wars. Then Asa was angry with the seer and put him in prison, for he was enraged at him for this, and Asa oppressed some of the people at the same time. Was Asa really angry at the seer? He was angry at the seer's message. Where did the message come from? He was angry with God. Even though he may not realize it in this moment, he is angry with what God has decided to do. This was really in rebellion to God's solution. All he said was, do what I've asked you to do. Trust me. I will get you through it. But Asa rebelled against what God's solution was. In Proverbs chapter 3, starting in verse 5, many people's favorite verse. Trust in the Lord with all your heart, and do not lean on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge Him, and He will make your path straight. Do not be wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and turn away from evil. There's so much wisdom in this passage. If you truly trust God with all your heart, you won't lean on your understanding. He says, in all your ways acknowledge Him. And again, as we think about what that means, basically in everything that you do, insert God into the equation. Every choice that you make, insert God into the equation. Everywhere you go, God should be there. God should be part of the answer. God should be the answer. We need to trust in God, not in ourselves as we often do. Well, the question may be asked, why? Why can't I trust my own judgment? Well, because God didn't design you to have your own judgment. Notice Jeremiah chapter 10, starting in verse 23. I know, O Lord, that a man's way is not in himself, nor is it in a man who walks to direct his steps. He says, you can't even walk straight without me. You can't even walk straight. I told you in an invitation a few months ago about a research project that a school did in blindfolding people and basically giving them a field to work in, and they start them off on a straight path. They blindfold them and they don't get very many feet away from the starting point, and it doesn't matter how long they walk. We have a tendency when we're blind to walk in circles. They can't even get from one end of the field to the other. When they were blindfolded, they would get a few feet and then start to veer off path. We have to follow God. It is not within man. God never put it in us to direct. That's why I believe wholeheartedly that every single person who lives on this earth, every single person who has or ever will live on this earth, has a hole that can only be filled by God. Nobody will admit that. I believe wholeheartedly that it is there, even if they won't admit it. They're missing something in their lives, and it's God. God didn't design them. God didn't build them to use their own judgment and walk in their own way. The only judgment that we use is that I'm going to use God's judgment. I'm going to follow God's word, God's will. That will get us where we need to go. Romans chapter 12 and verse 16. We're told, be of the same mind toward one another. Do not be haughty in mind, but associate with the lowly. Do not be wise in your own estimation. He said, we're all the same. Don't act like you're above someone else. God has made us all the same as children of God. He tells us to associate with the lowly. We need to seek out God's solutions to problems. Any problem that we have, we need to seek God's solution, because it's going to be the one that's right. And it will be the only one that is right. Last thing this morning, what we learn is that we need to listen to that and change. Asa heard God's message, right? He just didn't listen to it. Wise people will listen. Wise people will change. Proverbs 13 and 1, a wise son accepts his father's discipline, but a scoffer does not listen to rebuke. Listen, we know if we've got children of a certain age, sometime around the age of 13, every answer to every problem issue that has ever existed enters the mind of a 13-year-old, right? They know everything. They don't, but they think they do. Even with ourselves, we've got to be careful. Well, I'm older than you, so I know more than you. We've got to be careful about that. We don't. God knows. God knows the answer. But oftentimes, our children, right, they know better than us. They think they do. Here, God says, a wise son accepts his father's discipline, but a scoffer does not listen to a rebuke. What's going to happen if you don't listen to your father's rebuke? Then the same things are going to happen over and over and over again. Don't get ahead of yourself. In Proverbs chapter 17 and verse 10, a rebuke goes deeper into one who has understanding than 100 blows into a fool. You can beat that fool until he's half to death, and it's not going to make a bit of difference. But he says a rebuke, just a rebuke, a verbal rebuke, goes deeper into somebody that has understanding. if you get it, if you realize, you know what, I may not know everything and this person may be right. And so when they're telling me this, if I look at it and say, you know what, I'm going to consider this. He said, that will get you further than 100 blows on a fool. We have to, though, be willing to listen. But we also need to be willing to instruct. Do it in a way that's loving. Do it in a way that's kind. Do it in a way that is directed by God's Word. Because if we fail to help others, what good does it do? Proverbs 27 and verse 5, it says, better is open rebuke than love that is concealed. I love this person so much. I don't want to. Mark mentioned it in Bible class this morning, if you were listening. So we may have to tell a brother, look, you're heading in the wrong direction and we need to get that turned around. God said that's better than staying silent, staying quiet, just letting them go. Well, I love them too much to say anything. No, we need to be able to take the time to teach so that they can listen and change. If the goal is to listen and change, then there are going to be times where we need to teach and instruct so that they can listen and change. But how often do we not listen? If we're not listening in that scenario, we can't change. Did Asa listen? He heard the message. He didn't like it, and so he sent the prophet into prison. He said, well, you'll never tell me that again, because I'm going to make sure of it. Did Asa listen and change? No, he couldn't. He heard, and he acted the same as he always had. I wonder how often we do that. You know, it really is a sad story. You know, we if you look at any book, any commentary that talks about the kings of Israel or kings of Judah, Asa is listed as one of those good kings. And again, he was. And I'm not saying that Asa spends an eternity in hell. That's not my judgment to make. But that at the end of his life, we certainly see him falling off track. And God's going to judge him for that. Yes, he was a good king, but he failed at the end of his life. What does that tell us? Our basketball coach used to tell us this all the time. Don't get complacent. I think it was probably, you know, a year in before I finally, you know what? I'm going to look up this word. I have no idea what it means. He said, don't be complacent. Don't get to a point where you don't think you can do better. Where you think you are where you are and I can't go any further, any higher. He says, keep working hard. Keep fighting. Keep moving forward. And I think spiritually speaking, we have to do the same thing. Don't get complacent with our spirituality. We can always do better. We can always do more. We need to end on empty, giving all that we have. Paul talks about, I am willing to spend and be spent for your souls. I'm willing to wear myself out for your soul. We should be willing to wear ourselves out for our own souls as well. Give everything that you have. And then on the day when you leave this earth, you can face God in judgment, knowing that you did all you could, knowing that you gave everything that you had. But here's the question for you this morning. Have you truly given yourself to God and His Son? We can actually empty ourselves now, right? It's not me that's going. It's God. It's God's Son. As I mentioned this morning, sometimes we have to empty our cup so that God can fill it to the brim for us. We can empty ourselves right now. If you're not a child of God, you know that you can empty yourself right now and fill yourself with God and the things that God can give you. Fill yourself with His Son by being baptized and in the name of Jesus Christ for the forgiveness of your sins. Have you done that? If not, why not? If you're here and you are a child of God who maybe has fallen away, maybe has, instead of emptying so that God can fill, you've been filling with things that you shouldn't fill with. There's time and opportunity to make that right with your God today. End on empty. End today on empty. Empty yourself so that God can fill you. If you're here and subject to God's call in any way, please come have a front seat while we stand and while we sing. There's no longer to linger, charmed by the world.